The following is brought to you by the Starfleet Podcast Network, SPN, The Spin.
When I have them up, we brought soda and pizza. They're all carved up. They're all sugared up.
Yep.
So Shatner comes out. I'm Shatner. He comes out and, you know, and he's walking really slow. The crowd's going nuts. He grabs the mic from me. He goes, look, I don't want to be here. You don't want to be here. Let's just get through this. I'm like, Bill.
What?
Red alert.
Welcome to another edition of Beyond Trek Podcast. This is Big J. I'm here with Frank Nicotero. He's stand-up comedian, television writer, and television host. Thanks for joining me tonight, Frank.
Yeah, we've been communicating via Facebook, I guess, or Instagram. I don't know which one. But I had said when we interviewed you, you're our first interview of season two in Cincinnati. And I had such a great time with you, and you told me about your podcast. I'm like, hey, oh, come on, man. So yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
And the name of the show we did was called Wait, What Happened?
Wait, you have to shrug. You have to go, wait, what happened? Every promo. Right. We did a promo picture of me in Pittsburgh season one going, wait, what happened? So now they're like every picture. The marketing and promotion people are like, oh, they love this. So every picture you see of me now is, wait, what happened? So, yeah, it's a fun show, man. And, you know, I think our best interviews by far, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on your show, Cincinnati was the best. And as a Steeler fan and a Pittsburgh guy, it pains me because we've shot in Pittsburgh, Orlando, Cincy. And then after I saw you, we went to New Orleans about a month later, which was fun. But Cincinnati was just the best vibe, best people, had the most fun there. And I'm excited that season two is available on the very local app, which is free and the show's free. So I'm glad people are being able to see season two and all the Cincy, Kentucky stuff, because we were in Kentucky a lot too.
Yeah, I watched a lot of the season twos, especially the disastrous part that I was in where I decided to, it's like what you do in gambling at the casino. You're up and you decide not to walk away and to bet at all and then fail spectacularly.
You know, it's like, you know, it's go big or go home. And that, you know, that's what I love about this show is, you know, it's not a ton of money, and we're great to meet these people. We want everyone to win money, but the most we can win is $200. Sorry, the dog's barking. But, you know, so that way, the only good part about it being low money is if someone risks it or misses, then it's like, well, you didn't really lose out on too much. But, you know, I mean, look, every dollar counts, right?
Yeah.
And my dog's barking.
I was up 50 and I bet it all. Double or nothing. And the part that hurt was I was so confident that I thought I knew the answer, that the one I said it was not was it. Well, don't want to give too much away in case anyone wants to watch it. But.
Hold on one second. But hey, Courtney, I'm doing a podcast. I know the dog's barking, but can you quiet him and not scream the F word? Anyway, I apologize. You can edit this or do you go straight through?
I go straight through. You know, it's not a kid's show, so it's fine. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Screw it. I apologize. Our dog, you know what it is? It's 5 o'clock here on the West Coast.
Yep.
And we have two dogs and they're so programmed to eat around 5:15. So they start getting antsy and we're both in the middle of doing something. So that's unfortunately what
gotcha.
Scooby, keep it down. But you know, 9 out of 10 people go for it. Not a lot of people walk away with $50. You figure, well, $50 is cool. 100 would be better. And they go for it and it might not work out all the time. And trust me, no one's more like bummed out than me because I want everyone to win. But we did have a ton of winners. Don't want to say this to you, but we had a ton of winners in Cincinnati.
Well, that's great. And I promise everyone listening or watching, we're going to talk about some Star Trek, but... But first, tell us a little bit about how you started in your career. I see that you got your big break in Pittsburgh, but I'll let you tell that story.
Started a long time ago in Pittsburgh. I grew up as a kid obsessed with HBO comedy specials like Robin Williams and Eddie Murphy and Robert Klein, who's kind of a forgotten guy in time, but taped them all on a VHS tape, watched them all, and, you know, kept calling the funny bone like, hey, I want to be a comedian. And they didn't, they'd be like, you're too young. And then one day someone came up and crap, hold on. Courtney, there's someone at the door. I'm sorry. I have to answer this.
That's okay. That's all right.
hey, sorry, the owner of the house had someone stopping by to pick a few things up. So,
oh, no, that's okay. That's
of course,
all right.
This all happens right at 5. All day it's been quiet and peaceful in this house. So anyway, back to me. So started stand up in Pittsburgh and, was there about 7 years and then moved to L.A., went on a game show, won some money, and kind of ended up in that game show world as a run-through contestant. Then I started writing for game shows and then hosting. And here we are, you know, now I'm in Vegas doing this the sports gambling entertainment show that I do every day right out of the South Point in Las Vegas, the hotel. In the sports book, there's a TV studio, and I do this show from 12 to 1 Pacific time every day and have Hall of Fame baseball players on, local comedians and magicians. And we talk movies, sports, gambling, and it's been a blast. So after 27 years in LA, I'm now in the 702 in Vegas.
Wow, that is nice. Now, I can't imagine what possessed you to want to stand up and be judged in front of people every night telling jokes, hoping to not get something thrown at you or get heckled.
I think, I grew up in a family where it was encouraged to be loud and funny. My dad's side was Italian and we lived in Pittsburgh. So, the family reunions were like training grounds or I just observed my relatives all being loud and getting laughs and stuff. And, I was a classic class clown in school. I think I won class clown 3 years in a row, sophomore, junior, and senior year. And I tried stand up at 19. And that first day there was a guy at the Funny Bone who actually kept my number and called me back and said, we have an open competition. You should come down and try it out. I went down, did really well. And then I just started getting work. And, there were bars and pizza places in the late 80s doing comedy every night. So I got good really fast. And I don't know, it's over 30 years ago. So it's been quite a ride and I'm still going and headlining the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club out here in Vegas in May on May 17th and 18th. So that'll be my first big weekend here in Vegas and then some of the other clubs. So, you just got to keep hustling and, hopefully Wait What Happened gets picked up. And I don't know, man, it's just, I've just always been comfortable and, a wisecracker. So it works out. And a big TV fan. So I was like obsessed with TV, movies, comedy. So I'm trying to do all those things.
What got you started in Star Trek?
My sister. Now, my sister and my cousin Jim are huge Star Trek fans. Now, I was a little young for the original series, but I remember it was in reruns by that time already. And my sister loved Captain Kirk. So I started watching it. And I would get into it, but then Star Wars happened. So Star Wars became like, I was like, oh, Star Wars is way better than Star Trek. But as I got older, I started appreciating Star Trek. And I think I talked to you that I remember the Tribbles episode, Trouble with Tribbles?
Yes, Trouble with Tribbles.
Trouble with Tribbles. Mm-hmm. And then the one where they go back with the Chicago, the gangsters, right?
Yes. I'm drawing a blank on the name of the episode. I should know it, but yeah, I know exactly.
Those two are my favorite. So I remember we moved back to Pittsburgh after spending some time in L.A., and it was 1980, I think, or 79 or 80 when the Star Trek movie came out. And that was a big deal, right?
Yeah, December 79.
There you go. So that's when we moved back. So it was like the week we moved back. And I remember the movie was a little slow and I was maybe like 9 or 10. So I didn't love. But as the movies progressed, as soon as you hit Wrath of Khan, I'm hooked. So when Wrath of Khan came out, I liked that. And then 3, I'm going to say is Search for Spock.
Yep.
And then is the whale one the fourth one or fifth
yep,
one?
Fourth one.
Mm-hmm. So I saw all those in the theater, became a huge fan. And then I went back and rediscovered the series, I think. And the one with, is it Charlie, the kid that has the mind control?
Yes, Charlie X. Yeah.
Charlie X. And then I remember I had a big crush on Terry Garr as a kid. And I remember watching the episode with her all the time. Was she in the Charlie X one or was it a different one? I can't remember.
She was in a different one.
Okay. I remember that. And I met her. She was on Street Smarts, the game show I hosted. She came on and played for charity. And I talked about Mr. Mom because I love Mr. Mom. And then I talked about Star Trek.
Good movie.
Yeah. Great movie. And Michael Keane's from Pittsburgh. So he was like my hero. And then the episode where Kirk fights the creature on the rocks, which is Vasquez Rocks, which is a famous rock formation.
Oh, arena. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. It's about 40 minutes. There you go. It's about 40 minutes outside of Los Angeles. And my dad started taking us there in the 70s. And he and his brothers, my uncles, would reenact the fight between Kirk and, with them, they'd be humming the music. Dun, 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 So I remember that rock formation. So I was like 6 or 7. And I've gone back a million times since. And I always tell people, this is where I take tourists and friends. I'm like, this is a good Star Trek episode. And then it was in, a ton of music. Michael Jackson used it in Black or White. And it's been in a million Westerns, but every time I go there, the first thing I think of is Captain Kirk. So I kind of backed into Star Trek. I got to thank my sister and my cousin Jim and my sister, or my dad. They were big Trekkies. And I've loved the movies ever since. And I've watched a lot of the I haven't seen the last two new series and the one that's currently airing. But I definitely say I'm a fan.
Do you have a favorite series out of so you mostly watched the Trek in the 90s? I mean, had you kept up on TNG, DS9, Voyager, or any of the newer stuff?
Not as much. I did watch a lot of the Picard stuff, so I did see that. That's next gen. But I go original ones, and then I got to work with William Shatner.
Did you really?
I don't know if I told you this. So
let's hear this one.
Okay, so there was a game show called Show Me the Money.
I remember that one.
And he hosted it. And this came out right after Deal or No Deal. So the guy who created that was a guy from, he was Dutch, and Dick De Dijk was his name. And he created Deal or No Deal. So then he had like four other formats they brought to America, and that was one of them. And it was called Show Me the Money. And we had dancing girls on like different platforms with these scrolls with, you know, money amounts, and then they'd answer trivia questions. And one of the girls actually was Julianne Hough, who's gone on to be a big star. She was like 19 or 20 at the time. And so I was hosting all the run throughs for ABC. And they said, okay, you know, look, we're getting a name. We're, you know, I was kind of in the running for host, but this is how it worked a lot around then, was I'd come in as a hired gun, help them sell the show, and then they'd get a big name. I was like, all right. And a couple of times it would be people where I was like, kind of like, you know, like, oh, come on. And then they go, well, we're going to get William Shatner. And I go, okay, all right, fine.
Right. All right. Can't argue with that.
It's Shatner. So they asked me to do audience warm-up, which I had done sporadically here and there and, you know, on and off for years. So I go, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I knew how the show worked. They really wanted me there. I was almost like a consulting producer on the show too. So I get hired to work with William Shatner. And the first day they take me backstage to meet him. And I'm like, you know, hey, Mr. Shatner. He's like, call me Bill. I'm like, oh my God, I get to call him Bill. You know, it was great. So we talked and he's like, tells me what he's looking for from the audience. So we had a good time. So, but the funniest thing that happened. So this show was giving away a ton of money. The questions were too easy. I don't know. They were giving away hundreds of thousands of dollars. So we had a long break where they had to retool the game. Okay. So it's at about 11 at night. We were supposed to wrap at about 10. So 11 at night, they come out to me and they say, okay, here's the deal. And I go, oh, good. We're sending the audience home. They go, we're going to do another show. Oh my God. It was an hour show. Took well over 2 hours of doing because the rules were insane. And actually, Letterman actually made fun of the rules. He showed like all the rules one night on his show, but they weren't, that wasn't lives. They were that complicated. It was I can't remember. So anyway, it's now like 11:30 at night. People have been there all day. They're like, all right, Frank, we're going to do one more show. We have to do it. We have the crew here. It's going to cost us overtime, but we got to do it. Probably going to be about an hour till we even start. So you got to keep the audience fresh. You got to keep them going. And the production manager handed me a big wad of cash. He's like, give money away, get people to stay and get them excited. We're bringing pizza in. I'm like, oh my God. So doing jokes, I'm doing singing contests, I'm giving away cash. People are going crazy. So the crowd is just like peaking. It's like now it's close to 1:30 a.m. But I have them up. We brought soda and pizza. They're all carved up. They're all sugared up.
Yep.
So Shatner comes out. I'm Shatner. He comes out and he's walking really slow. The crowd's going nuts. He grabs the mic from me. He goes, look, I don't want to be here. You don't want to be here. Let's just get through this. And I'm like, Bill.
What? What?
I just spent 2 hours hyping these people up, getting them ready. And now, of course, their mood is like, and I'm like, no. And we shot until it was about 2:30 in the morning. And Shatner, I mean, he was in his 80s at the time, right? Because he's like 93. I saw him on Bill Maher last week. I think he's 93, maybe even older. But he was a great guy. And, you know, during one of the other breaks, and it might have been during that time at like 1:30 in the morning, I was having people say jokes. And I was up near William Shatner and someone goes, hey, Shatner, whatever, you know, I have a joke. And I'm like, oh God. He's like, you know, and he does that Uranus joke. Do you know about that? Yeah. Toilet paper and it's Klingons around your hand.
Yes. Yeah. So,
and now here's
Shatner. That old stale walnut.
Yes. So Shatner's sitting on steps on stage, and he's got one of those little pocket fans to cool him off.
Yep.
The guy says the joke, and Shatner just goes like this. Just like drops his head, just shakes his head. And I'm like, okay, no more audience jokes. Maybe I'll just do my job a little better. But he was super cool. And it was just neat to see him work. But, you know, I don't think he's since hosted a game show because I think he realized it was just not his forte. But at the time, he was doing Boston Legal. He was really hot. It was for ABC. And it was a great idea, but it just, the show didn't work. And we shot like 8 or 10 shows, but only like 4 or 5 of them aired. And they didn't even finish airing the other ones. Now, technically, if people don't win on a game show, they don't have to pay them. But ABC was like, no, we're going to pay these people because it's been a nightmare. So we're going to pay.
Give me just a quick second. Sure. I'm going to be right back.
No, no problem.
Okay, sorry about that.
No, no.
There's this weird thing in this house where if the kitchen light is turned on downstairs, that the microphone picks up interference.
There's a hum.
Yeah, there's a hum. It's copper wire or bad switch, right. Something like that. Which was it was ridiculous how I discovered that, because there was this day. We were recording a podcast. This was several years ago. And I kept getting this buzzing, which I hadn't gotten before. And so I'm unplugging things, plugging it in, doing all this stuff, uninstall drivers, reinstall drivers, trying to figure out. And then it like went away. And I thought, okay, well, something I did there must have fixed it. And then at another point, we're doing a recording and it just came back. So I'm pulling my hair out, no pun intended, trying to figure out what this thing is. And as I'm doing my stuff, I kind of hit the microphone a little bit. And the way I hit it, it pointed to where, like, just over here. And the humming got a little louder. So what I did was I took this microphone off the base, and I'm walking around with my audio recorder, like a Ghostbuster.
I was just going to say,
I was waving around. And so I went in a couple rooms and I isolated it to this one spot. I'm thinking, okay, what's directly below us here? And I went downstairs and I said, let me just turn this light off. And the buzzing stopped, which is crazy. Like, how would you come to the conclusion that that's what was doing it? And it was. And I told the other co-host that, and they were like, really? That's kind of crazy. That's, how did you figure that out? So
that's good. That's good. Yeah, smart guy.
It's part of the job. But so working with William Shatner, what was that? What's he like in person? Of course, you always hear a lot of different stories about it, but what was your experience?
Nothing negative to say. I had seen him down the street from my house. Was a place called Sushi 101. It was a sushi that I had heard when I moved there. He frequented a lot. And I went for the first couple of years. I didn't go a lot, you know, a couple times, 3-4 times a year, maybe. And one night I was in there and he was very approachable. I didn't go up to him, but I saw everyone knew him that worked there. And he was very affable, very nice to everyone. On his way out, he nodded. And then a couple of years later, before I even worked with him, I walked out and I was walking in and he was walking out. And I just stopped and shook his hand. So Mr. Shatner was very nice. And he was so professional and so nice on set. I mean, the only negative thing I have is when he came out, I don't want to be here. You don't want to be.
Yeah, really.
Just like taking all the energy I built up. But no, I mean, super nice and, you know, just quick witted. I mean, I remember back then it was like, oh, you know, this is like 2007. So we're talking, he was in his late 70s and he was sharp. And then I watched him on Bill Maher a couple of weeks ago on a Friday night. And the guy's still just quick, man. I mean, I don't know what his secret is. He's talking about when he went to space. But, you know, I would see him at, you know, passing backstage or at the craft service table. And he remembered everybody. He'd be like, Frank, you know, hello, Frank, you know, just good day. Real quick. He'd tell me what he wants. Hey, can we do this? Can we do that? Sure. Whatever you need, Bill. I always thought, by the way, I felt weird calling him Bill.
It's still I weird. Bet. They're like, are you sure you don't want me to call you Captain? Or
yeah,
sir,
right.
Or Mr. Shatner.
It was just always weird. But, you know, that's what he wanted. And, you know, he was a super nice guy. I mean, nothing negative to say, except for that one thing. It's not really negative when I say that he said that, but he was very tired. It was 1:30. They had kept him there all day and they kept changing the way the show worked on. The show was kind of a disaster, other than my chance to work with him and Julianne Hough's first TV show.
Yeah.
I think they tried to even air them on Game Show Network, the unaired shows, but then they realized they didn't have the rights and they had to, they got sued. There was like all sorts. The show was just doomed.
Right. Now, did Star Trek play any part in your career, whether it be the stand-up comedy, the game shows, any of that, or has it just been kind of an isolated like hobby? I like Star Trek, but it hasn't
Yeah, probably more isolated. I mean, like I said, it was weird that I loved going to see them on the big screen. So I loved all the movies. I remember the one, as I referred to you, the whale one, which was I don't know what time of year that came out. Could have it been spring or summer? I don't remember. But I remember going to see it several times in the theater because I just loved it so much. And that was when my sister, she's the one who took me because she was the big Trekkie. So I've enjoyed them all. And I haven't watched any of the latest two series, just too busy or whatever. I don't know what it is. But I still do. The original ones are just still the ones that I identify. I think it reminds me of my dad. Reminds me of watching them for the first time as a kid and just being freaked out and being scared a lot.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was like some of the aliens scared me and, but just all great memories, you know? And, if it's still, does it air anywhere for gosh sakes? I don't even know.
Well, they
stream anywhere. I mean,
it's on streaming.
Paramount Plus maybe, right?
Paramount Plus.
Okay.
Well, it was on Netflix. They had Star Trek on Netflix and then it was taken off Netflix. Paramount Plus, you know, I want to say that I'm sure you can currently watch any of it because it's Paramount Plus and that's like their main thing. Yeah. So yeah, there's another subscription service if you want to add to, you know, you probably have multiple like we all do.
I have at least five or six and I even forget if I, you know, I'm like, oh, what is that on? I forget. And then I have to check and I go, oh, I do have it. So good.
Well, we are right back to where we were with cable and the whole reason why we cut the cord with cable and went with streaming. Now we are right back to it where you have everyone's doing their own streaming service and they've all got that one show that you like. So it's $10 to $15 a month for every one of them. And if you like multiple shows, you're in trouble because it's going to be pretty expensive. It's just like with cable where you had that one show you liked, but it was that next tier up where you got 40 channels you didn't give a shit about. And you had to pay the extra money just to watch whatever, you know, reruns of Matlock or whatever it was, or Lifetime movies.
And I find myself mostly on Hulu because it re-airs a lot of the network stuff that I miss, or, you know, then you can watch it without commercials. So I think Hulu is probably my go-to one. Peacock and HBO Max probably. And Paramount, I guess Paramount too. Hold on, Courtney, what's that? Oh, okay. You can use the restroom, Court. Okay, the dogs are fine. Okay.
That's okay.
Everything's happening all at once. But now that we're talking about this and now that I'm talking with you, I feel like this is going to be my go to sleep show the next couple of nights. I'm going to put on some old episodes.
Yeah.
I need stuff that are comforting. I can't like try to get involved with something, but if it's something I know, then I can like I do Family Guy or Modern Family or Seinfeld or Friends, just stuff I've watched a million times, Veep. So I'll put some old Star Treks on. I think this is going to be a good idea.
It's very interesting to watch Star Trek now. If you haven't watched it since you were younger, say when you were a kid or, you know, just younger in life, it's very interesting to go back and rewatch it after you've spent all the years just, you know, hearing all the tropes, all the memes about it, the way that William Shatner would do kind of that exaggerated delivery of Kirk. Funny thing is, he doesn't do that in the show. There was maybe one time, kind of, but it's one of those things that
we
took that and ran with it. Beam me up, Scotty, was never said in that sequence of words.
Yeah.
But that's it. And then it's like, that's another thing. And
we'll play it again, Sam from Casablanca was never had. It's just the way you think about things. I don't know.
That was never said in that movie.
No, it was play that song like you have for me again, Sam, or something. It wasn't that vernacular. And even like, we're going to need a bigger boat. I don't think was that exact phrase. It was from Jaws, which is the line. It's close to that. I'd have to check.
That's that. Isn't that crazy? Because I thought for sure those things were in it. Just as sure as I know people probably thought, yeah, beam me up, Scotty. That's from Star Trek. Well, no, that actually that was never said. That was something that
you're going to need a bigger boat. Not we're going to need a bigger boat. Everyone says we're going to need a bigger boat or something.
So the line from Jaws is you're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah. But
We've not just social media, but
yeah.
the world at large turned it into we're going to need a bigger boat.
I think I would say so. Yeah,
that's great. Gotcha. Here's a story that I would like to hear from you, because I've listened to some comedians on different podcasts and things like that on YouTube. And one of the things I like when they talk about is when they bomb, you know, their worst bomb, getting heckled. Which I guess the reason I find that interesting is because you learn a lot. There's some saying about you learn a lot from your failures, or
sure.
like you learn more from failing than you do from succeeding.
Your mistakes. Sure. Yeah.
Something like that. So
and failures.
What's yours? What's the one that just really stings?
Thankfully it's been a long time, but if anyone ever asked me about this, I was very young. I was newer, and I got booked to play a senior banquet for a high school in Pittsburgh. And I was young, but I had been doing it a little bit. And so I got hired, and they didn't know a comedian was going to be there. They thought it was just a band. Well, the band the high school had booked, had went and saw it, like this convention, was double booked. So the agent was like, well, I'm going to give you a different band. They're just as good. But to make it up to you, I'm going to give you a comedian for free. And he was going to pay me out of his own pocket. So it was the Richland High School Senior Banquet. And this was like a really rich area. So it was at a yacht club, for God's sake.
Oh.
So I get there, and it was in the spring, so it was really warm out. And I remember I go to the bathroom before I go on, right? Mm-hmm. And I see a bunch of the kids in there drinking out of a flask. I'm like, oh God. So I go, they're kids and they're already drinking, and it's going to be a little, and they were like spoiled rich kids, right?
Yeah.
So I go, okay, you'll be on stage. And you know, I was supposed to do like 15 or 20 minutes and then bring up the band. So I go to get ready, and the class president gets up there, and I think he was one of the kids in the bathroom. He's like, So like, all right, the band's ready to come. And everyone's at the front of the stage ready for the band to dance and, you know, have a good time. They're like, but before the band comes out, we have a comedian. And they're like, they just start, they don't even know me yet.
Wow.
Go, oh my God. So I come up, I grab the microphone. I'm like, I start telling jokes. Try to tell one or two jokes, and then they just start chanting in the back. It's, by the way, it's like 700 kids, right? Giant banquet hall. And they're going, asshole. I'm going, oh my God. So I'm like, I'm fighting through it. I'm like, because in my head, I'm like, I got to do 15 to 20 minutes so I can get my money. I think it was $150 or something. You know, it was a lot of money.
Yeah.
I do something. It doesn't work. They're really rowdy. They want the band. So I turn around to grab the glass of water. So I have the mic in my left hand. Mic's in the left hand. So I go to grab a drink, and as my back is turned, they pull the mic out of my hand. And it was the class president. He's like, you're done. This isn't what we thought. And I went, so now it's 700 kids silent, staring at me. And now I got to get off stage. Now, like I said, it was a banquet hall, and the door is at the other end of the banquet hall, and all the tables are close together. Right. So now I have to get off stage, walk through the crowd, excuse me. Then I get to the tables and think I'm on the freeway, but the tables are so close and the chairs are all pulled out with coats. So I'm like, excuse me, can you move in, please? And everyone's just staring at me like this. And it seemed like it took 20 minutes to get to the door. I get out to my car. I think I cried. I had a car phone. I called the agent. I'm like, I'm really sorry, man. I'm like, that was, he's like, don't worry about it. He's like, my fault. Shouldn't have put you in that situation where they didn't, you know. And, you know, then I remember a couple of days later, I had another show and it went great and I was fine. But that's the one that sticks in my head. That really is by far the worst one.
Oh, wow. It's like doing the walk of shame.
It was worse than the walk of shame. And it was just all these students who were heckling. So they're rowdy and yelling when I'm on stage. But as soon as I'm getting yanked, as soon as I get yanked off, it's super quiet. And that walk, I remember having to push chairs in between coats. That was a nightmare.
One of this forearm shiver. One of the parents.
Terrible. That's my worst story.
I've never had a chance to interview a comedian. So what I've always been curious about, and I apologize if it's a stupid question, but you know, I this isn't a regular thing. Okay. I get to pick the brain of the comedian, but how do you come up with the jokes? Like, what is your process? You're just sitting there one day and you just play something in your head and think, oh, this would be funny.
I was trying to see if I had a notebook here. I have notebook cards that I write a lot of stuff. I write ideas down. Some guys write verbatim, like word for word, how they want to do it. I just kind of write a concept, a bullet point with a few ideas and take it on stage. I'm really more of a storyteller. A lot of things that have happened to me, situations I've been in. So that's why, you know, I don't do jokes. I don't have like set up punchline. I'm more storyteller, animated. That's my style. That's observing situations. I like to work with the crowd a lot. I don't do the same show twice, the exact same show. Some guys are like rigidly doing sets where I might do things in different order. And I like to involve the crowd. I always have. I always like to have a few beers on stage during a show. So, I have a good time up there. I want the audience to have a good time. And that to me, that as long as they're laughing, that's I'll do whatever. So, but mostly stories and,
Storytelling then is
just things that have happened to me that I've incorporated. I mean, I'll do some observational stuff, but I don't do jokes. Like if someone ever tell me a joke, I go, I don't have jokes. I'm like,
that's not how you do it. That's not how I work.
I have like bits, they're longer. Like I had to do a show last week here for a thing. And it was like, oh, we just need you to do like 3 to 5 minutes. And I'm like, I don't even know how to do it. Like when I'll do Jimmy Kimmel's, I'll do 45 minutes to an hour, so 3 to 5 is almost like more of a challenge to me, but it went well. I did a show last Wednesday. But it was just a quick set. So I'm like trying to edit my head and, it was just, cause my is usually stories, like I said.
That's gotta be pretty tough when you're used to a particular format that's longer because I mean, that's, what, half a story doing 3 to 5 minutes?
Yeah.
What do you talk about when you saw some like old lady trip on the curb and fall and skin her knee?
I need more time. Yeah. That's always been, in LA, most sets are 20 minutes, which is a great set. It's, the clubs you go to on the road or like in Cincinnati, it's a 3-person show, right? Mm-hmm. MC, middle, headliner. But in LA, it's always just 20 minute sets, 20, 20, 20. So when I would go on the road again and then have to stretch out and do 45 minutes to an hour, it was like, oh, okay, that's even more fun because I get to do more and, have a good time. 20 minutes is a good set time too. But I enjoy doing a longer show. I just get more relaxed, the crowd more involved. And I'm looking forward to doing these longer shows next month.
Is there a particular place or a chain of comedy clubs that you like prefer going to?
Yeah, no, I mean, when I was on the road heavily in probably the late 90s and stuff, I was doing improvs and Funny Bones a lot. Funny Bone was based out of Pittsburgh and I got a lot of work through Columbus since I was in Cincinnati and Sharonville, Covington, Kentucky.
Yep.
And then, they were ever in Milwaukee, Tennessee, down in Florida. I mean, they were everywhere. So once you got in with a good chain and you did a good job, you kind of got to work a lot. And then when I moved to LA, I didn't do the road as much because I was just around LA. And then I got, a couple TV shows. So it was like, it kept me in town and I didn't have to go on the road. And I miss those days though. They were fun though. But you're doing a Wednesday through Sunday. You do a show Wednesday, Thursday, 2 Friday, 3 Saturday, 1 Sunday. And that was my life for a good 8 to 10 years, like, on the road a couple weeks a year or a couple weeks a month. And I never wanted to burn out. So I wasn't one of those guys who would go out 5 to 6 weeks because I'm like, then they become miserable. I'm like, this is a fun job. So I do a couple weeks, go back home, hang with friends, do shows around town, go back out. It was a good time. That was a lot of fun.
Do you still do a lot of traveling now or is it mostly you kind of stay put? Yeah.
Well, now with this job in Vegas, I'm kind of locked in here, but there's enough clubs around here where I can do shows, but I haven't, last time I was on the road, I was in Des Moines, Iowa, the week before COVID hit. I remember my girlfriend and I, and we had a blast in Des Moines, Iowa, by the way. It's a Funny Bone there. It was great. And then a few weeks later was March and everything shut down. And I remember like at the end of the year saying to her, I'm like, who knew the highlight of our year would be a trip to Des Moines, Iowa? But it was, but it's a fantastic club. So I'll try to get to Pittsburgh and do some stuff when I can, just cause it's my hometown. I can go see Pirate games or Steeler games and a few weeks on the road here and there, but now I'm pretty much settled in Vegas for a bit and we'll see how it goes.
Is there going to be more Wait What Happened?
You know what? We have to wait and see what happened with how many clicks we've got. You know, the first season did really well for him. The second season, I asked the guy who hired me. I said, "Hey, how's the show doing?" He said, "We won't know the metrics and the numbers for like 2 months." So it came out in March, I think, right? Mid-March.
Yeah.
Early mid-March or something. So
something like that.
Mm-hmm. Probably won't know for a couple. You know, when we were done in New Orleans, we kind of all looked around like, "Hey, this might be it," because we didn't know we were going to get a second season. So we did the second season. It was great. And if there was a third, I'd love to do it. It's fun to go back out on the road and do those shows. I mean, it reminds me of what I did with Street Smart. So, yeah, I'd love to do more. I hope it does do well. I know it clicks on very local well, and I try to pump it as much as I can on social media. It's a cute show. It's fun for the family. You know, you can watch it with kids, with your grandparents, whatever. Good play along factor at home, trying to figure out the answer. So hopefully we will do a third season.
Well, I sure hope so. And if you're ever in Cincinnati doing a comedy show, let me know, because I definitely want to come down, buy a couple tickets and watch that. I haven't been to a comedy show in forever.
I will when I come there, I will get you comped in, sir, to make up for you going for the Double or Nothing and not getting it. I will make up for it with a few tickets, I promise.
That will make it feel better.
There you go.
Well, thank you very much, Frank. Yeah, I really appreciate your time and sitting down and talking with me. That was really great of you. Yeah, and
sorry for some of the distractions. But listen, anytime you got my email address, you ever have anything you need, let me know.
I will do that. Thank you so much. Okay, I appreciate it. And Frank, hope you live long and prosper.
Yeah. I love it.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can support us at patreon.com/beyondtrek.
We are Beyond Trek Podcast. Lower your inhibitions and surrender your years. We will add inspirational and hilarious Trek content to your day. Your attention will adapt to subscribe to us. Resistance is futile.